You're listening to Locked On Cavaliers, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Hello and welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers from the Locked On Podcast Network. I am Chris Manning, your host and the site manager at ForTheSword.com, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers blog. If you aren't already, you can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Megaphone, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. A five-star review is the absolute best way to support the show. You can find the show on Twitter and Facebook at Locked On Cavs, and you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at CWM Writes. On today's show, we're going to talk about the Rodney Hood trade, which broke on Sunday. Rodney Hood is going to the Portland Trail Blazers in exchange for Nick Stauskas, Wade Baldwin, and two future second-round picks that will convey in 2021 and then 2023. We're also going to talk about what you should watch for this week on the Cavs beat, specifically looking at the trade deadline, injuries, and the three games they play this week. And then lastly, we're going to do the weekly check-in on Colin Sexton and where he currently stands in a stat area that I think tells you a lot about why he is struggling right now. To start with the breaking news, as you know by now, Rodney Hood trade. Rodney Hood is going to Portland, and I think the Cavs got fair value for Hood. I think it'd be fair to label him a disappointment with the Cavs because he fell out of the rotation last year after they acquired him in their big roster shakeup at the trade deadline. He was not that consistent last year when they really needed him to step up and gave him opportunities to step up. There was the whole leaving the bench incident, and the refusing to go in the game incident, rather. And then he was not all that consistent this year, battled some injuries, certainly I don't think made a big name for himself, didn't do the Cavs any favors, really. And for the Cavs, I think they lucked out. And if the reports of $9 million a year for him were true from what they offered him this summer, I think they ended up with the right offer in terms of not paying Hood a ton of money. For me, I think the coup here is these two second-round picks that Kobe Altman got. And it continues the trend of what Kobe Altman is doing as the team's GM. What he has decided to prioritize in trades is the continued landing of picks. That is seven picks so far this year in trades, one first rounder and six second rounders in the trades of George Hill, Kyle Korver, Sam Decker, and now Rodney Hood. If you look at the overall outline of the Blazers, the trajectory of those picks, it so happens that 2021 is the year that both McCollum and Lillard come off the books there. Perhaps they fall apart by then if one of those guys asks out or, you know, moves on, gets hurt or whatever, and then that pick is a high in the second round, and you would guess by 2023 that the Blazers would be on some kind of a decline at that point, so that 2023 pick could be high in the second round. And look, this continues to replenish the stock of second round picks that the Cavs lost. I think that this is a way for them to not only get future chances to draft interesting young players and then develop them, but it's a chance to maybe trade these two second-round picks, get another first if there's a player they like. So let's say it's, you know, we get to June, they make their pick at the top of the first, near the top of the first round, they love someone who happens to fall into the 20s, maybe they call a team that's going to be picking later and doesn't have a necessarily interest in taking anyone or financially wants to avoid picking a first rounder this year. They trade those two future seconds, and then they get their guy. That is why having all these picks is valuable, and I think Kobe Altman's doing the right thing in getting these picks. Of the two players they did acquire, I like Stauskas more. Now, he did fall out of the rotation this year in December when Jake Layman bumped him, and then in January basically hasn't played that much. His numbers are not great, but I do think there is something there in terms of getting a guy who can shoot, who can be a secondary creator, who isn't a totally useless player, and they need wing minutes filled. I think especially if you see Alec Burks get dealt by Thursday's deadline, as we sort of expect to happen, I think Stauskas will have an opportunity to play. There are definitely worse bodies you could have there. They need the shooting, I think. Just having another guy that can make threes, that is comfortable as a spot-up player around Sexton, around Jetty, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing to really add to the roster. So I'm okay with Stauskas coming in. Obviously, maybe isn't as good as you would have hoped when he came out of college, but he's not bad. And additionally, this is a guy that isn't tied on future money. So it's not as if you took on a bad salary here when you still have the opportunity to do that and get picks for it. Wade Baldwin isn't nothing necessarily. He was cut from the Grizzlies after being a first-round pick because he was a bad locker room presence, as far as we know. He's only played in 16 games with the Blazers this year. He will be a restricted free agent this summer if the Cavs extend him a qualifying offer. Would not shock me if he's just not on the roster very soon. If they want to clear up a roster space, Kobe Simmons will likely be the guy that gets moved on from here. He's on a 10-day deal right now. You would think they will probably get rid of him easiest to clear up that roster spot. Baldwin maybe could play. Maybe he becomes someone they keep at the end of the year, bring him into training camp next year, something like that. But I don't think he is anything super to write home about or be super excited about. I think Stauskas is the more interesting player of the two, but it's really here about the picks. And in Rodney Hood's case, I do think this is a better fit for him. He's going to go to an organization that will play more similarly to what he had in Utah. He will be asked to do a little bit less, be asked to be the third or fourth creator on a team because of McCollum and Lillard as opposed to like the second. So I think this is a win-win for both sides. I think Rodney Hood did, you know, he did have to approve this trade. So I think for him, clearly he feels good about this. I think clearly this is probably the start of a couple moves the Cavs will make this week, but I think it's overall a good deal. Hood's time was disappointing. His about 1 year with the Cavs definitely wasn't, I think, what they hoped in getting him and taking that gamble on him, but at least they got some value for him before he likely would have left the team this summer. So I think for both sides, this does make some sense. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to go into the week ahead, and we're going to talk more about the trade deadline because that will be the big story this week, but also the schedule and a few other things. So stay tuned for more Locked On Cavaliers. And we are back. Okay, so moving on from the Hood trade, let's start this week looking at the trade deadline. It is the big story this week. It is a 3 p.m. on Thursday deadline. So if you're at work, if you're going to be out and about Thursday, no, 3 p.m. is the last time we'll get deals. Be on Twitter at that point or check out Fear the Sword and be ready for all the moves that are going to be made or perhaps aren't made. Keep those Woj bombs on alert. Be aware of those fake Woj and Shams accounts and Mark Stein accounts because people are weird and decide it's fun to impersonate journalists for some reason. That's very odd. We will have a big deadline recap show up on Thursday night for Friday's show. So it'll go up early with Jeff Siegel from Early Bird Rights and For the Sword. We are going to break down everything that happens Thursday. So stay tuned for that on Thursday. So the Hood move does kick off the Cavs' deadline activity, but I think there are other moves to be made. If you're looking at the roster, the Cavs are not necessarily overflowing, I think, with obvious trade pieces. I think any chance of Kevin Love being dealt, unless I'm just completely wrong about this, which, you know, will happen, I think any chance of him being dealt went out the window when he basically hasn't played since the beginning of the season. I mean, even if he does play Tuesday, which Larry Drew said on Saturday he doesn't expect to happen, I don't know if we're going to be in a situation where a team's going to want to trade for Kevin Love now. I still maintain that a trade for him in a team like Portland or Utah or someone going on and acquiring him from the Cavs is likely to happen post-free agency this summer. I think the likeliest move that we're going to see here is would be the Alec Burks deal. It's just when you look at his contract, he's on this big expiring contract. He isn't, he's not an unuseful player, but he's not worth nothing. And you're looking at a guy who's going to, you could flip him for bad salary. He's making $11.5 million this year. You could flip him even on his own for another contract that is worth that. You could aggregate his salary with J.R. Smith's contract, and you'll get acquire something pretty significant there in terms of bad salary. You know, I don't think the Chandler Parsons thing from Memphis is like going to happen. But that's what I would have kind of really been, you know, really been doing. I think Burks just, I would be shocked if he didn't go. I think he just, his value in getting him was to come in, be a guy that could fill some minutes and maybe help your team a little bit, but also be a trade chip. They acquired him at a point where it basically just wanted to acquire him and trade him again if possible. Like, that is the way this sort of works. I think otherwise, it will be interesting to see what the Cavs' strategy is. You know, does John Henson's a name that I just wonder what happens there. He's making 11 this year, 10 next year, hasn't played. I don't know, you know, I don't necessarily think he should be in any of the Cavs' plans moving forward. But, like, is the team going to want to have John Henson on the books for $10 million next year? That's a question. You know, I think Sexton's safe. I think Delly's obviously going to be around. Nance is going to be around. Zizic, maybe if there's some sort of deal we're not expecting where they're trying to sweeten a pot for some team, maybe he gets thrown in there. But I think Burks is really the one name to look at, with Henson being the other one. JR obviously will be there as well. I tend to think he just is going to be someone that does get traded around the draft ahead of free agency. I don't see a team really kind of seeking JR out right now for in terms of actually getting on the court and playing. So I think that certainly just means he's likely to get traded pre-summer. Cavs could flip him, and maybe that's when he gets combined with Henson. And then they could take on a bigger salary from a team. Maybe it's a player that's still useful, but is just making a lot of money next season that they want to get off of, or you know, maybe less than that, or if it's 2 years of money, maybe that guy's still useful to the Cavs, but JR offers that small guarantee, Henson is a lower amount of money, or JR on his own could be flipped to a team that wants to get aggressive with cap space this summer, has that minimal guarantee on his contract next year. Cavs can take back a player and go from there. But so I don't think JR gets moved Thursday. We don't think he's getting bought out as of now either. So I think it starts with Alec Burks. You go to John Henson, and then we'll see if anything else comes up. The Cavs should be active. I expect them to be maybe a facilitator as a third team. Maybe that's how Burks fits into this. He can be aggregated with other salaries, so that is in play on the deadline. But it starts with Burks, and I think from there it's a little more muddier, especially with the Hood deal done. It's a little unclear what else might be done. Injuries are also going to be a big story for this week. So Jetty Osman obviously sprains that ankle on Saturday. We don't know exactly how serious it is or if he's going to be out for any extended time. As we record this, it's 11:12 p.m. on Sunday. So don't know exactly. If Cavs have not, to my knowledge, updated that information anyway. Don't think it was super serious, but we'll see perhaps Monday. Tristan Thompson, we're getting closer to his two-week return date. From the soreness, or if he does come back after 2 weeks. So we'll see if Tristan, any news there in terms of him coming back. And then Kevin Love is obviously the big one. Again, Larry Drew said on Saturday that he did not expect Kevin Love to play on Tuesday at home against the Celtics. So if he does play this week, that would mean he would play either in Washington on Friday or against the Pacers on Saturday. If he doesn't play this week, which I sort of think might make the most sense, there's a soft landing spot for him to play against the Knicks at home on Monday the 11th, and then they play the Nets that Wednesday before the All-Star break. To me, if you want to play it super safe, be cautious with Kevin, not rush him back in any way, I think the way to do it is to bring him back a week from February 4th on February 11th against the Knicks, a team that is not good and will not be super hard necessarily for him to come back. And it's an easy intro before we play Brooklyn Wednesday. And then he gets the All-Star break to recover, to kind of rehab his body a little bit and see how he feels after those two games. You know, I would be flabbergasted if he played both halves of the back-to-back this week, but we'll see. It does not seem like he is going to talk about his injury status. He's been around the arena. I've seen him a couple times of late. It does not seem like he's going to talk in a significant way until he does play, probably the morning of that he plays at shoot-around. So we'll see. We'll see if there's any update on Monday. The Cavs do practice Monday, so we'll see if there's anything coming out of that about him or Jetty or Tristan. But Kevin's the big one, and Jetty sort of, we'll see if he does miss any time due to that ankle, and we'll see what happens with Tristan as well. And lastly, three games this week. So the Cavs play the Celtics at home on Tuesday. They're in D.C. to face the Wizards on Friday, and then the Pacers on the road on Saturday. Of those games, I think Tuesday's game interests me the most. I think just the Kyrie, how good he's been, just how good Boston is. It's at home. I want to see the reception Kyrie gets in that game. There's just something about that game that I'm sort of interested in. It's at least going to be a good team coming in. How do the Cavs handle that? How does Sexton handle that game? Does he, you know, he's played against Marcus Smart pretty recently and had some struggles there. Can he do a little bit better in that game? And then, you know, the weekend games would hold some intrigue. Obviously, you know, Indiana has no Oladipo now, so could the Cavs, even on the second of a back-to-back, maybe steal a game there against the Wizards? Can they do better against a team that has played better of late and they've had some success against this year, including a significant blowout not too long ago? And, you know, again, if Kevin Love plays this week, I think Friday, Saturday makes sense. What will it look like to see him make his debut on the road, and which of those games is more likely? That's just something to kind of watch with those games. But again, Boston Tuesday, Washington Friday, Indiana Saturday. Three interesting games. Three of the last five games for the All-Star break. No game Thursday due to the trade deadline, and then they're not a primetime team, and then Tuesday being the only home game in the last game before the deadline. We're going to take one more break, and then we're going to come back to get into Colin Sexton. But stay tuned for more Locked On Cavaliers. All right, last segment of the day, we are back here. So, Colin Sexton, our weekly check-in on the Cavs rookie point guard. So, here's a stat, and this is going to be a stat-heavy breakdown of where Sexton's at right now. The last time Colin Sexton shot 50% or better in a game was on January 13th against the Lakers. I was on the West Coast road trip. In those last nine games since then, Sexton is shooting 33.9% from the field on 13.4 attempts per game. He's getting to the line 3.1 times per game, which is slightly above his average of 2.9. And he is shooting 36% on three-pointers. Negatively here, he's shooting 33% on his two-point attempts. Sexton is, here's just a breakdown according to NBA.com's breakdown of where he's shooting. So he's 3-19 from the field over these last 10 games of 10 of 14 feet. He's 1-8 on 15 and 19 feet, aka prime mid-range. On 20 to 24 feet, he's 4-24. And then for the year, he's also then 5-10 in 5-10 feet, and then he's 20 of 47 in under 5 feet, aka basically right at the rim over these nine games at 42%. For the year, he is 47.9% under 5 feet. That's a high volume of his shots. That's a big area for him. He's struggling a little bit in these other areas, but it's the one at the rim that I think stands out the most. That's not a good percentage. Both of those numbers, his numbers for the year, again, 47.9% under 5 feet, and then over his last nine games, 42%, are roughly 9% below the league average, according to NBA.com/stats. He is basically just a horrid finisher at the rim right now. And until he can improve that or get to the line more or a combination of those, ideally, I don't know how much better he can get. To put this in context, among other point guards, rookie point guards in his age range over the last couple years, De'Aaron Fox from the Kings, who is a statistical model similar to him based on last year, shot 56.2% under 5 feet as a rookie. So that's pretty good. Lonzo Ball from the Lakers was at 46% last year as a rookie and shots 5 feet and in. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, the Clippers rookie, who I think would have probably maybe been the better pick for the Cavs based on what we've seen from him so far, is at 57.3% in shots under 5 feet so far this year. Atlanta's Trae Young is at 53.6. And then Mav, now Nick, Dennis Smith Jr. was at 55.5% as a rookie. So in that grouping for the year, the only one he's better than is Lonzo Ball. And he's actually worse than what Lonzo was, which is not good. 46% is pretty bad over these last nine games. He really struggles there. I do think it is a touch issue. You know, I don't think he's quite got the softest touches at the rim. He goes super hard, and he doesn't quite have that Kyrie-like or pick your favorite point guard kind of suave with the ball. He doesn't have the Russ athleticism and size to kind of be super athletic and just finish through stuff. there's just something he's got to kind of figure out there and build more of an identity of when he gets to the rim. I think strength is going to help. I think the biggest thing with him is he just needs to get a lot stronger. He needs to be able to absorb contact better, finish through contact, and not be relying on making wild finishes even when he gets to the rim and is using his speed in a productive way. Now, I do think Kevin Love's return could help Colin Sexton. Sexton could do some, you know, some quick dives on some handoffs. He could roll. He could cutter on Kevin Love at the elbow. Getting him moving in different ways instead of just having to load up and burst at the rim or attack in transition or what he's doing now that isn't working, obviously, is going to help him. And I think just the attention that should be paid to Love in theory will help him. Getting more spacing this year and beyond will help too. If you watch the Cavs and you watch his drives, he's barreling into clogged lanes. The Cavs don't have a lot of room inside for guys to attack and to do damage. And again, his touch is not there totally. He doesn't quite know when to put a little bit of softness on the ball or drop a floater or when to draw contact or necessarily how to draw contact at a high level. And that's going to have to change. That's going to come with reps. That's going to come with summer league play. That's going to come with time in the gym. That's going to come with getting stronger, watching tape, and getting time to develop. This is what I would keep an eye on going forward. I think the three-point shot is encouraging. He looks more comfortable taking it. He's making them obviously a better clip than he was early on. You know, the defense is, he's a rookie point guard. It's going to take him a while to get good on defense. Very few rookies are ever good or show signs of being competent on defense. The jump shot, again, in mid-range, he's taking less of them. That's a good sign. If he can't start finishing better inside, if he cannot be a more effective driver to the rim, get to the free throw line, just be a more productive, useful player in this capacity, Colin Sexton's ceiling gets pretty limited. And you wonder just sort of how he best fits. It's too early for us to like write him off. It is too early for us to look at him and say Colin Sexton is useless. Colin Sexton doesn't have the type of value that you would hope for him, but he needs to kind of, I think, get a better look at some of the stuff that he's doing, and he needs to just kind of figure out some of the things that are really, really holding him back and perhaps keeping him from being there. Now, he is, he isn't drawing fouls at a good rate now in particular. So according to Cleaning the Glass, his shooting foul percentage, which is a percentage of the percentage of a player's shots where he was fouled on, he's in the 30th percentile at 6.5%. He, in terms of and ones, he's in the 33rd percentile at 19.6%. So that's basically in the lower third of the league. He's not good at it. There's just a lot of work that needs to be done there. I think until he gets it, his ceiling is capped. And that's where I think if you're looking at him to make some kind of stride this year into next year or the end of the season, this is the area. It's finishing inside. It's making shots under 5 feet. And it is getting to the line, making free throws. The three-point shot, the defense, that'll come. But this, to me, will, if he can ever figure this out, I really wonder what he will be as an NBA player. Again, too early to write him completely off. It's not a good sign that, it's not encouraging, I guess, is a better way to put it, that he is struggling this much in this capacity right now. So that is going to be it for today's show. We will be back tomorrow with a preview of Cavs Celtics. We'll talk about Monday's practice as well and see what Larry Drew and co. have to say Monday on Independence. If there's any trades, any rumors, we'll react to those too. If you have questions you want answered in the next mailbag, which will be a draft-only mailbag with the one and only Trevor Magnotti, you can submit those to Locked On Cavs on Twitter at Locked On Cavs or to LockedOnCavs@gmail.com. If you leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, leave your question in there or send me a screenshot of that review to LockedOnCavs@gmail.com. That does guarantee your question gets answered. At Fear the Sword, Jackson Flickinger, our newest writer, has what you learned about the Cavs this week up today. Trevor Magnotti's draft viewing guide is up. And Jeff Siegel wrote a great breakdown of Cavs and their Rodney Hood deal and why that deal, I think, makes sense for them. Thank you so much for listening. This has been Locked On Cavaliers for Monday, February 4th. I'm Chris Manning. Find me on Twitter and Facebook at CWM Rights. Have a great Monday. I'll talk to you tomorrow.